Hello everyone, welcome to your latest episode of the Wolves Fancast. Scully here, and we are recording pretty much in the aftermath of the victory, I'm glad to say. 1-0 win provided by that man Pedro Neto with a lovely finish. We'll obviously get into the game shortly, but I wanted to introduce my guest today. We've got Dan.
Hello everyone.
We've got that man, Stu.
That man, Stu.
That man, Stu.
This is different. Hello, everyone.
And a bit of a special guest on the pod today is Paul Berry. How you doing, Paul?
I'm good, mate. Thank you. Yourself?
Yeah, not bad, not bad. What appearance is this for you now? Are you a hat-trick ball or something like that? You still on Soccer AM?
I'll be number three, mate, yeah. I'll look out on the post, yeah.
We'll have to commemorate it in some way.
We'll get something off DH Gate for Paul.
Yeah.
Or Wish.
That sounds about right. Well, as is the way with football at the moment, boys, it's quite an active week amid Wolverhampton Wanderers as a football club. Now, transfer window, you like signings, but we've had a couple of signings that wouldn't necessarily obviously constitute new players, but some important signs have been made this week, which is the tying down of captain Connor Cody and Raul Jimenez to new contracts. Dan, let me start with you. What do you think about these new deals? What do you think the sense of doing this is, really?
Massively important to keep the continuance of the squad that we've got, the philosophy that Nuno's trying to build with his key players. I think someone said at the start of the window, you're recouping 80 plus million, and you're still able to keep the likes of Raul, Neves, Cody, Bollard, your main spine of the team. I think everyone would be mostly happy.
So, Jimenez, obviously has been such a key figure for the club over the last couple of seasons, signed until 2024. Now, that probably allays any of the transfer rumours around Jimenez for the short term, but what do you think of the idea that he's going to be here till 2024?
Well, his contract till 2024, let's just say that. I mean, it's great news. I mean, I was one of the ones at the end of last season thinking that without European football, will certain people still be here? And it just knocked them fears on the head for me, more than anything else. And do I expect him to still be here in 4 years? I mean, it all depends on our club performance as a whole, but it gives him security and it gives us a bit of money, leeway, either way now. So it's just a good deal all round. Same with Cody. I mean, Cody's never going to go to a better club than Wolves, is he? Let's be honest. And you can't really see him leaving. But on Raul's point of view, if we do stagnate and he wants to move in 18 months' time, that we've still got 2 years on him. So it's just a superb deal all around for me.
Paul, I think I'm right in saying you've worked with Connor Cody in the past. It's tied down till 2025. How important do you think that is for the club?
Yeah, I think it's massive. I worked with him for a couple of years while I was there, and I think he's just... I mean, I think everyone's seen what sort of character he is and what sort of guy he is, and he's exactly the same behind the scenes. I think he's almost like the glue that kind of holds everyone together. He's probably almost the last one standing now, isn't he, from a sort of few years ago. And I think as well as on the pitch, I mean, with that system, I'm not really sure who else in the squad could potentially play that position. But off the pitch as well, I think he's massive. And the same with Jimenez for me. I think if you'd pick one player almost that you wouldn't want to lose, just because I'm not sure there's anyone else in the squad that could play that role as well as he does. I think it's him. So, you know, echoing what both the guys said, I think being able to keep him this summer for me is massive. And, you know, who knows whether he was going to go anywhere. But I think he'd have been a huge loss and perhaps more difficult to replace than others.
Anybody think Jimenez, at the age that he is, thinks he might have hit his peak already or might be on his way down as a footballer over the next few years?
Well, for a striker, it's prime years, eh? He's signed his prime years to stay in Wolverhampton, which is incredible, really. But yeah, you think at the end of them 4 years, he'll be what, 34? Then you'd start thinking, yeah, you're going to the Sheringham territory then. Sheringham, not bit of inside baseball into the WhatsApp group where I'm pretty sure that Gully, did you ever see John Aldridge play?
I've seen him miss a penalty in an FA Cup final, but that's not obviously at any point during the time I was alive. But that's about it.
Well, I compared the playing of young Silva and Jimenez to Russian Aldridge and got mocked for being too old. but yeah, I think his prime years to here. And his video, I said, that weird video that he did with Bully, which is, go and watch it yourself. It's just gold. All kinds of gold, comedy gold, Wolves gold. But his best years are going to be here. And I think to commit himself, and he's clearly happy here. If he wasn't happy, he'd be gone. And you've got certain people on Everton fans, on weird Everton fans, like Matt Hand on Twitter, who's obsessed with Wolves and talking about him all the time and going to United and all this nonsense. And he's gone nowhere. And it's a compliment to Wolverhampton and the club, both at the same time for me. And to commit his, going on a ramble, but to commit his future and to commit his prime years to Wolverhampton, he's superb for the town and the club.
Yeah, I can see it already. 2023, 12 months left on his contract. Nice big payday in China, eh? That sounds about right. And I'm sure Fosun can wheel a deal or something for us in that sense. Right, and we've got some more incomings and outgoings as well. Obviously, transfer window is open till tomorrow. All but confirmed, I think, that Ruben Vinagre is on his way. Obviously, he's absent for the game today as well. Now, we know he had all sorts of potential back in the Championship especially, but what do we make of this guy's, Paul? I'll go to you first. What do you think about the Vinagre situation?
I think, I listened to you guys last week talking about it, and I think he's not quite made the progress perhaps that either, fans would have wanted or Nuno would have expected. And I think there's been a few sort of younger players like that, haven't there, where if they don't take the chance when they come into the team and they drop out again, they're at an age where he's not played a huge amount of games in his career and kind of almost feels like he needed to go somewhere to progress. Now, whether that was on loan, as this is, but equally, if it goes through, it looks like it could be a permanent deal potentially. So, yeah, I think probably the right call, sort of in a way, compares a bit with Morgan Gibbs-White for me, who probably needed to go out and do what he's doing, albeit in the Championship, but, never really played a full season of constantly playing rather than just dipping in and out. So, I think he had a lot of attacking promise, obviously defensively perhaps from time to time, let a few things slip. So I think whether Nuno's probably had a look at him over the sort of, last few months, pre-season, and that deal sort of come about now where they can let him go and bring in someone else, and he's probably just thought, yeah, Ruben's not really going to feature for him consistently, so let's do the deal.
Yeah, it's an interesting one for me because I think back to certain games, Sevilla in the Europa League, he had to come in and do a job for us, and he played, I think it was one of the better games he's had last season, Manchester City away, he started that game and we won 2-0. He has shown he can be relied upon at certain times, but Dan, will you miss the step over King?
I think we'll all miss those L1 R1 control pad moves that he had locked down. But I just think Wolves and it's like we're in the editor mode, isn't it? With like finances and somehow we've managed to get ridiculous money for another young player who's people are saying is not good enough for us, but he's somehow going to another Champions League team. It's a bit. Yeah. On paper, it's a bit how we ended up in this state, but I think we all agree that he has stagnated over the last year. I mean, it's all hearsay. Has he really settled in Wolverhampton when he's not getting the game time that he probably thinks he deserves? Marcel coming in against Sheffield United and starting over him was probably the final straw for him. Maybe that was it. He wanted a move after that. It's just all about who we're getting to replace now. I know there's talks of the Roy Knight Nori from Angers, but I still think there's got to be someone better than him that we've got lined up to fill straight. And I think at the moment we're struggling with a turnover of players and the new players not knowing the philosophy of what we're trying to do, or whether we're trying to do too much in too little time.
You don't think Aitnori's going to go straight into left back? He's
got to be lined up, hasn't he, to fill straight into that role, but doesn't know any of the team players, doesn't know where really, you know, acclimatised to the physicality of the Premier League straight off. It's a big gamble on a 19-year-old, regardless of the potential.
And he did play pretty much the whole of the season until it was cancelled for Angers, but last season, though. So he ain't like he ain't the French equivalent of Vinagre from appearance-wise. That's why I just presume that, I mean, we'll come on to it later, well, Stace played there today, but I think he's just nailed on to just come straight in. I mean, either way, if he's next to Bolly or Stace, he's got someone who can speak French. I mean, I don't know if he can speak English. You'd presume he would do, because obviously everyone does. But he's one of them where I think BT probably got the biggest ratings for a league on fixture on Friday night. They met Wolverhampton people watching that game. But you watch it as well, Gull. I mean, we're the OGs. We watch French football.
Yeah. People won't be able to see this, but I'm rubbing my hands together at the prospect of Aitnori, to be honest, having watched him on night. I was going to come to you, Stu, because I know that you've watched the game, but what do you make of him as based on that viewing?
Well, he didn't take no prisoners, did he? You could see, if you want to be negative, you think, well, this is his last game, he's going to go out in a blaze of glory kind of thing. But he was doing pirouettes against, I mean, yeah, they did get smashed, let's be honest. And there was a couple of runs inside of him which he could improve on. But again, he's a kid, and to play that many times in that division, I mean, it's not a farmer's league, let's get that nonsense out of the way. It's not the best, but it's not a farmer's league. And you're playing against one of the best teams in the world. And he didn't disgrace himself, did he? So he played really well. I mean, and you only have to read 442 and all the other publications of that kind and one to watch. And he was in there for the last 18 months or so. So, and being linked with both Manchester clubs, and there we've all been well. We've signed him up at time of tonight or whenever you hear this. I'm really excited.
Yeah. I think from what I saw of him, when they talk about players kind of oozing class, every time he touched the ball, he seemed to just have a little bit of authority over it. And he already looks a bit more mature than Vinagre, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In terms of the way he receives the ball, decisions he makes. And in the final third, he was picking out passes. And I think that's something that we've lacked from the wide areas, especially down the left-hand side. You know, Johnny's a slightly different player, but you need an option who's going to get down the flank and whip a cross in. And, you know, he looks the real deal from what I saw of him.
I think on Vinagre, what we all saw against Burton and that goal that he scored there at Burton away 3 years ago, for his attacking wise, he hasn't really changed at all. He's still doing, like you said, the step over King, and he's still doing it.
I can't recall him assisting, to be honest, over the last couple of seasons.
No. He's still doing them. You look at the players like Ronaldo when he came to the Premier League, or Premier League, whatever it was at the time, and he got that nonsense knocked out of him pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And Vinagre was still doing it. Yeah. He was still doing it last week. And you think, well, you've been here for 3 years, you should be acclimatised to English football now. You can't do this shit anymore. And he's just not learned, and he's not pushed on. And like you said about Gibbs White as well, he's the Portuguese Gibbs White, and he needs, if he's not going to come back now, is he? And putting that price tag on his head is just securing the asset for me.
Yeah, I think the option to sign is a bit of a death knell. But with the transfer window closing tomorrow, Paul, we obviously brought you on because you've got some ITK and you're going to give us an exclusive now. So fire away, mate.
I didn't have that when I was working there, mate. I mean, 5 minutes notice, it's like, all right, okay. But yeah. Well, I mean, all the signs seem to be that if they get that one deal done, that's it, isn't it? From what I'm sort of reading and seeing, I wouldn't know anything else unless anything sort of pops up tomorrow. I don't know if it's an 11 o'clock job or a 11 o'clock job. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, it just seems to be the way Nuno operates. It is this small squad. You know, we've got fewer fixtures this season without Europa. It's just unfortunate, I guess. I mean, we've got so used to not having injuries, but to bring Marcel in and lose him pretty quickly. I don't know how long that's for, but with Johnny already out in that position, I mean, it's unheard of, I think, to have a couple of players in the same position absent. So I guess that's almost been a bit of a downer so far, but you know, hopefully he'll come back soon. So yeah, I mean, I don't know what you guys feel or whether you've heard anything, but it just feels to me like they're probably happy with what they've done, and he's just going to work with his squad and hopefully get them to improve over the coming weeks and months.
Yeah, I mean, more importantly, happy with what we've done. Dan, in a sentence, just to wrap up before we move on to the Fulham game, are we happy with the transfer window?
No, crap. I think on paper, we've been sold a good transfer window on the back of how much money we spent on Fabio Silva, but for me, it hasn't been the window that I was looking for us to kick on with. You look at the sort of balance sheet with the incomings to what we've spent. Have we really spent much money this window and improved the squad in a whole? To me, I don't think we have. I see Paul nodding. I'll take that.
I think, you know, it's almost like it feels like a window for the future to a degree, doesn't it? I think, obviously, even if you look today, Coutinho, Silva don't come off the bench. So again, I think there is this thing with Nuno. I think he just loves working with players on the training pitch, and hopefully those two, you know, are going to come good and get more minutes sooner rather than later. But yeah, I think, I suppose it feels like a sort of transition now, I think, doesn't it? Almost like we're losing a couple of players that have been key players for the last 2 or 3 years. So no, it is, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how it pans out, really.
I think you look at all the other clubs in the Premier League, the ones who we were competing with in that top six last year, they've all gone out and improved. Apart from Man United, who are going to panic by 2 or 3 tomorrow. Everyone else has massively improved. Everton, who was nowhere near us there, they massively improved. And I think it will be a transition season, which is quite annoying, really, considering how close we came last.
Can you class Edinson Cavani as a panic buy?
He's about 8 years too late.
So very quickly on our transfer window, if nothing else happens, are you happy or are you expecting more?
You've gone Football Manager-wise and you give it 20 out of 20 for potential, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
But that's what you've signed potential, which is...
Fans don't want to see potential, do they?
Exactly. I mean, that's the problem. I mean, if we'd have come a cropper today, it would have been absolute pandemonium chaos on there online, but we scraped over the finish line against Fulham at home. And you look at that team and you think, well, I know we'll come on to it in a minute, but there's glaring places. But centre back, I think we're fine. We're absolutely fine anyway. We don't need any cover there. But central midfield is a worry, and it's been a worry for 2 years and it's not been addressed. And we've got Vitinha, who looks like he's got promise from the YouTube compilation videos that we've seen, because that's all anyone's seen of him. But that's all it is. It's signing promise. And I know that we can't go out and spunk 60 million on central defenders like Man City can. But you've got to look at things. I mean, I know we've mentioned before about Villa, and Villa have been sensible. Villa have got proven.
We can't be saying things like that, Stu.
We can't
be doing that.
I can feel the fire burning inside me. I'm going to be taken by the devil, but.
Dirty word for the Villa.
They've cemented themselves in mid-table by the signings that they've made. And we've come from two consecutive seventh place finishes, and we're not going to get there again on the window that we've had so far. No chance. Just because of it, there's glaring omissions in the central midfield and there's striker. I mean, again, we've got, if Jimenez got injured, we'd put in our faith in a kid, even though it's our record signing.
It's
all a bit weird.
I mean, some might say that we're not going to finish top seven based on performances so far as well, but we know a lot can happen in 24 hours, guys. So we sit beside our phones tomorrow with bated breath. And we'll see when the transfer window closes. Today's game, 1-0 win against Fulham. It was always going to be an interesting team selection. Wolves obviously play their cards close to their chest when it comes to players' fitness, especially, you know, the rumours of Pedence being out before the West Ham game were all, you know, filling up on social media. No one really knows where Marcel is now. You know, it's it could be tucked in a corner of Moligny somewhere, and we'd have no idea why or for what reason. But to see the left side of the team when the lineups were announced, how do you think this looked to you? Did it fill you with excitement, Dan?
I mean, me and Stu had a quick conversation before we came on, and you look at sort of Saïss at left back today, and he played a lot better than what Vinagre's done for months. He put more crosses in than I've seen Vinagre put in for months. I know it wasn't ideal. We're missing too many players to make a solid judgment on today for me. I think not having Marcel at the back, you haven't got your cemented left wing back in there. And you know the way we play. It's Cody flanking balls onto the wings, getting our wing backs further up the field, then getting in Neto and Poland into the game. And I think today, it was just about getting a win today, just to relieve some pressure for me.
Yeah. I think the Wolves 4.0 project in the first half, especially of keeping the ball, we didn't even do that a lot of the time. It was so scrappy, and it was one of them things where it took about 10 minutes and then you thought, oh, this is just like last season all over again. You could have had a bath and come back at half time. Nothing would have changed. And other than that superb double save by Mr. Nipple in goal for Fulham.
Mr. Nipple.
You can't.
You can't resist, can you?
Exactly. You're playing in goal in England, and you got Areola on the back of your shirt. I mean, come on. But that save from Semedo. That save from Semedo was absolutely superb. To get up that quickly and to spread himself like that, that was a great save for me. And that was the highlight of the first half.
Makes you wonder if Nipple is actually an English surname somewhere. Do anybody know any
families
known as Nipple? No, well, here.
Mr. Man, Mr. Nipple, yeah.
Yellow Pages.
Yeah.
Paul, we had the lesser-spotted Max Kilman in the starting lineup today. All of a sudden, we're flooded with left-sided centre-half/wing-backs. How do you think he got on?
I think he's all right, yeah. Yeah, it's a bit of a strange game, wasn't it, I thought. I don't know, he didn't... We seemed to concede a lot of chances towards the end. I mean, I'm trying to think back, not many of them seemed to come down his side. And as Dan said, I mean, I thought Saïss did all right, to be fair, out of position. And suddenly, this season seems to be starting these sort of marauding runs up the pitch, doesn't he? Which is always interesting. But yeah, I mean, I think Kilman, I mean, he played at Liverpool last season, didn't he? And I think another game at home. He seems pretty calm and unfazed by it all. And I can't remember him doing too much wrong, which I guess as a defender is always going to lead to trouble. So yeah, I think he was solid enough. Not sure how, again, if you've got everyone available, how many games he'll play, and you know what he does to sort of develop him over the coming season, etc. But yeah, I think he did okay.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were a bit uneasy about the whole Mitrovic versus Cody matchup, but Kilman obviously gives us a little bit of physicality. He's a big lad and he can compete with pretty much anyone size wise. So, and like you say, if a defender hasn't been that noticeable in a game, he's probably had a good one. Yeah. So fair play to him. Dan, in terms of the first half, what did you make of it in general? Just the kind of as a moving on from the West Ham game in particular.
We did look void of confidence, I thought, in the first half. I still think they're trying to bed in a new way of playing, and with like the turnover of players that we've had in, I still don't really think that the general consensus is that they know what they're doing, whether they're trying to counter, whether they're trying to build from the back, fast direct play. I don't really think they know what they're doing as a whole at the moment. I think it's only going to come with time. Like I said, the chance that Semedo missed in the first half, if that goes in, I think Fulham's head would have dropped a lot quicker and we would have probably coasted that game. I don't really remember them testing Rui as much as the aftermath on Twitter suggests that we struggled against Fulham, but as I said, today was just about getting the result and getting some confidence back in the team.
Yeah, I mean, Fulham haven't obviously had the best of starts this season, and it was only a matter of time before they actually decided, well, hang on a sec, we've got to get our act together and shore up. And I think it was noticeable that Well, for a start, Michael Hector wasn't in the team, which was sad to see from our perspective. And, you know, they were noticeably just a lot more secure, patient, tentative with their shape. Stu, I mean, we've obviously seen problems from Wolves' perspective in breaking teams down last year. I mean, it doesn't really look like we've moved on in that regard, does it?
No, I think that's exactly what I was saying about central midfield problems as well earlier on, that we still haven't got anyone to unlock the door when teams do this to us. And it was very much pass sideways. It was like the Carl Henry tribute act a lot of the time from everyone. And it was, you could just see where it was going to happen, what was going to happen. You go down the left and you come back in, then you go down the right, then you come back in, and there was no movement. There was no, it's just frustrating and annoying because it's nearly 4 years now of this, onto the fourth season of the Nuno, and this nonsense still carries on. And you think, why? And this is the whole point where he said about we need to change as a team and we've gone as far as we can. But if you've got Vitinha on the bench who can unlock teams like this, then just put him on, just give him a go. And it was just, I don't know who it was in the group who said, is anyone awake now or something like that at half time, but it was true, it was just boring again. And you can see a shot from outside the box or a set piece is the only way we're going to score, because we can't break teams down still who just flood the defence. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were hamstrung by the left side not being at optimum level, shall we say, because, you know, diagonal right wing were available there. You know, Nelson Semedo actually had a couple of opportunities to get in behind. But, you know, for a fact, Romain Saïss isn't going to be picked out with a big diag from Cody and bomb past his fullback and whip a ball in. It's just not his game. For a start, I mean, Paul, I don't know if you had a clue where he was actually playing, because he kept popping up in really odd positions. Did you spot this in the game?
He kept wandering around in the air. I think, again, I don't know if this is part of the sort of new tactical sort of total football, etc. But, yeah, it was, I don't know, I mean, I was with Dan. I think it was literally just about trying to win the game today. I think it just feels like it's been a strange time, doesn't it, with no time between the seasons. I think it was, 5 weeks between the last game of last and the first of this. Players coming in and out, a couple of injuries which we're sort of not used to, and obviously at the same time trying to change to a new way of playing. It just feels, it all feels a little bit strange. And I think, I mean, the problem, if you like, I said earlier, I think Nuno, he just loves the training ground and getting the players bedded in and playing how he wants to. And obviously now, you know, we've got 2 weeks internationals where most of them are away. So I think it will, you know, it will come good. It's just probably going to almost, you need 2 or 3 clear weeks on the training pitch, get people fit again. I know it's some of these old cliches coming out, but I do, you know, I really think that's when you can start to judge. And yeah, today was just somehow getting 3 points, which fortunately we managed to do.
There was a time after about 10 minutes when Kilman was saying to Saïss, go over there, when he was in the centre circle.
It's bizarre. I think, you know, you get the odd number 10 who can kind of have license to pick up the ball wherever they want. I think Saïss is, you know, Nuno's invented this new position, roaming hatchet man. And Saïss is just allowed to wander all over the pitch, kicking whoever the hell he fancies.
The roaming Saïss.
Yeah, yeah.
Did he get booked? Well, did he get booked today?
That's,
no, I don't think so. I think he avoided it.
Yeah.
Maybe when you let the shackles off, maybe counterintuitively, he actually kind of reins it in a little bit. But that's your pod title there, Stu, I think.
The roaming Saïss,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, the obvious highlight of the first half was Mr. Nuffle making that double save. I mean, with the departure of Jota, Nuno's obviously put his eggs in the Neto Pedence basket now, Dan. So, I mean, how did they look on the whole today, do you think? Obviously, Pedence has produced in assists so far this season. Neto took up the baton today. How did it look for you?
Those two young lads that you just mentioned are on their way to fulfilling that Jota void of goals that he's left, which you've been doubting them since the season kicked off.
I have to accept that one.
Remember, Jota only got 7 league goals last season. Neto's got one already. He's got two assists.
Dan, you're going to use the fact it's against Fulham against him now, because Jota only scored against Brighton and Palace and other teams.
I just think that they are two players that we are going to have to heavily rely on this season, which maybe we're asking a bit too much from them, especially Neto. For me, I think Paulins will be in and around what we need him to be come the end of the season with goals and assists. Going back to, what was your original question?
Just how do you think they looked as a kind of, you know, that's obviously where we're looking to go from as an attacking threat. Traoré dropping to the bench. How do you think it worked, really?
I said, like, all first half, I thought we lacked ideas. There was a few times where Jimenez was deeper than Powden and stuff. I think there was one pass where Jimenez played it to the left wing and there was literally no one there. And it was just like, you need to get your heads together here, lads, and listen to what you're being told at Compton. But like what Paul mentioned with the lack of pre-season that we've had and the fact that the FA have drowned us in a used nappy, you know, I didn't have a chance, as I didn't want to swear, lads. I didn't want to swear.
But you're right. In that example that you've just used, you know, Wolves' system and shape is so drilled into them. Players don't almost need to look up to know where their, you know, their teammates are going to be. It's, you know, it's so uncanny that they, and Jimenez would usually play that pass and he's expecting Johnny to be out there or he's expecting an other to be in that left wing back position. That's obviously not been the case this time because Saïss went walkabout, assuming under Nuno's instruction, but it's not quite clicking, especially given how we looked at Sheffield United in the first half. You know, we've had spells in games, even against Man City in the second half. We've had spells in games where we have looked really fluent and fluid. But I think moving on to the second half, we did kind of kick on a little bit after half time, as we would. So, Paul, do you think the second half syndrome that we seem to be, you know, really, what would you call it, infected with, is continuing a pace this season?
Word of the moment, yeah. Nuno seems to love sort of just getting into games and bedding in, and obviously Sheffield United was such a sort of departure with getting those goals. And as we've seen, I think, the last few years, Wolves are such a good team when we go ahead. I mean, I know, you know, there's a few anxious moments today, but we do, you know, being able to control the game with the central midfield that we talk about, because that is their game, isn't it? The passing and the hanging on to the ball and that sort of thing. So if we do get ahead, we do seem to be, you know, to do okay. And I think, yeah, I mean, Neto and Podence today were sort of energetic and it sort of came to the fore a bit in the second half. I don't know what you guys think, and I'm probably clutching at straws a bit, but I do think the lack of fans, and again, and this is going to be around for a long time, I think we're a club and a team, and the way we play, sort of power and pace, and, you know, young players that love that crowd, I do think we perhaps do miss that a little bit more than most, and just the general support we would have had today. And again, it's probably a pretty daft thing to say because this is how it is, but I don't know, I just feel there's been a fair few sort of games where when we could have had the crowd just getting us going a bit, maybe the first half thing wouldn't be so pronounced, but then, you know, it did happen when we had fans in, didn't it? It was a lot better second half, and I think Jimenez had had the chance, hadn't he, just before the goal as well, which could have been there. We just needed to get in front, I think, today, didn't we? And then it would have been as it was, we'd have won.
Still a nice goal, wasn't it?
Mm. It was a superb finish. I mean, he's kind of making a name for himself with just, he's not even placing them. It's a mixture of everything. When the heat is on, Neto's cool as ice. And no, he's just, but you look at the amount of, I mean, that chance that Raul missed, the one-on-one, which again, he blasted straight at the keeper, where you think he should be doing better with that, really. And the one against Man City where he should have been doing better with that. And Raul, he doesn't seem to be on it yet for me, which is, again, understandable with the amount of games from last season and blah, blah, blah. But Neto looks sharp. And Pudence looks sharp. Not so much today, but against Sheffield United, Pudence looks sharp. And like we said before, these two players are going to be what Nuno's bet his hand on. And today it worked for him, because that finish was absolutely sublime. And I think in the first half, there was a lot of things that we mentioned about Jimenez's little pass into the touchline. A lot of it was like muscle memory from last season where they were passing to nowhere. And you think, well, what are you doing? And you think, well, yeah, Jota would have been there or Doherty would have been there, blah, and that kind of thing. So it's like retraining each other and retraining everyone to a new style of play and a new way of thinking in the space of, what, 4 or 5 days before the season started? And it's like when Solbakken tried to change Mick McCarthy's team and look what happened there. And obviously that's not going to happen here. But it's trying to change your mindset and it's going to take time. But yeah, that... from what your actual question was, it was a superb finish from Neto. Absolutely superb.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, this game reminded me a lot of the Burnley game post-lockdown where, you know, it's been a bit of, you know, a bit of touchy-feely in the first half. Nothing really to, you know, say. And, you know, we scored a really nice goal. But then we decided to drop off and allow Burnley, who had not been in the game at any point until we scored. And Fulham, it felt, weren't really in the game. I mean, they brought on Adem Olunmu, who suddenly looked like the best player in the Premier League for about 20 minutes. But Dan, does it concern you the way that Fulham came back into the game?
No, not particularly. Just because of the way what you mentioned, I think it's standard for Wolves under Nuno in the Premier League that once we go 1-0 up, that we will absorb opposition attacks and then try and do them on the counter again. My worry is when we play a better team, is giving these teams better chances, then what's going to falter us. My main concern at the moment is the fact that what Stu mentioned, just Jimenez doesn't seem to be properly on. I think he was trying too hard in that second half to score once he missed that first chance, because there was a moment where, if you remember, he had a blocked shot when he really should have played Podence in.
Yeah.
So maybe he's trying a bit too hard at the moment. Maybe he's got his big deal now and he don't care anymore. I don't know.
His goal bonus must have gone through the roof on the new contract, hasn't it? That's what it was.
How much they must be paying him now for him to stay for 4 years makes me wonder what the wage structure is and why we haven't gone out and why Mendes hasn't got James Rodriguez here. What's the wage structure now that he's re-signing?
With every silver lining, there's a cloud with Dan, I think, isn't it?
Is it you're effectively saying that Raul Jimenez is the new Jamie O'Hara?
Oh yeah, he's going to call it in now that he's got his new contract. Yeah.
He'll be turning up to flipping Compton and red Ferrari next week.
Lest we forget, he wasn't a striker of that much repute before he arrived at Wolves. I mean, he has a lot to thank the club for. You know, the fact that he's shown a bit of loyalty, you know, maybe that's just reward for what the club's done for him and what Nuno's done for him in particular. Because, you know, it's only recent, the last 18 months, he's been spoken about as one of the best number nines in Europe, for sure.
Yeah,
absolutely. Paul would...
last chance to go on it, I think, as well. You know what I mean? I think you're right. I think this was probably... he was going to get a big move to a big European club. This was probably his chance because of, you know, how as he's getting older, which I think that's a positive. Like I think Stu said earlier about him staying, you know, I think that's a huge kind of boost, really. But again, yeah, the pressure's sort of on him now. He's the main man, isn't he, again? And he's got a new contract. And so, yeah, fingers crossed he starts finding the net.
I think he thrives on having that role. I think that's why he has stayed.
Yeah.
He hasn't been trusted to be a club's number nine, wherever he's been. And I think we were talking about earlier whether maybe he has already peaked, but the fact that he hasn't really been playing week in, week out for the clubs previously probably does us a favour, really, in the long term.
Yeah, and there's been countless examples of players who, you know, will move on from a club, suddenly start playing games, and all of a sudden they all will beat us. Going back to the game... Paul, there's a bit of squeaky bum time, I think, towards the end of it. I mean, off the top of my head, Kamara's chance being the one moment where you thought, oh, we've got away with one there. Dan, I really appreciate the point you made about not being too anxious. There weren't really too many counter-attacks going the other way, I think, was my concern. Paul, would you agree?
Yeah, I guess, yeah. No, it did feel, again, going back to that Burnley game, where you just thought that, you know, you did think we were inviting it a bit, and equally you thought, well, we're not going to score, and obviously the penalty came and they did. And I think, yeah, only needs, you know, you needed one moment, didn't it, or a mistake at the back, or that chance to drop a little bit further down and it was in. So, yeah, I think, and again, especially with Traore, I suppose sending him on when we did, you almost hope that he's then going to carry the ball up the pitch, you know, and ease that little pressure for the last sort of 10, 15 minutes. And didn't seem to happen today, did it? Which was a bit concerning. And
I think that's the first time I've not seen him dribble past someone in a game.
Because he didn't get hold of the ball.
Yeah, he hasn't gone, did he at all? But yeah, no. So it was, and I think Crumbs, you can imagine, like you say, what would have happened. We had conceded, but yeah, strange game, and a bit worrying at the end. But yeah, 3 points now, and I don't think anyone will remember it for too much longer, will they? After.
I guess in many ways we were lucky it was Fulham. Stu, I mean, I've been calling for it, but do you think there's any coincidence between Dead Donker returning to the team and us winning the game?
Well, absolutely not. I mean, you can't play them two, Neves and Matinho, together anymore. It's like the Gerard Lampard thing for England. It's just blatantly obvious now that it's got to that stage where they're just in each other's way. And you play one or the other. That's why when I saw Matinho warming up, I thought, well, he's going to take Neves off because he's for some reason, he was getting himself all worked up, and he was I'm amazed he gave himself sent off, the way he was just kicking out at people and being all rash, and it's weird for him. But yeah, that's what I thought the change was going to be. And then as soon as he came on for Pedence, I thought, oh no, here we go again, holding on to a 1-0 lead. But yeah, it's Dendonker just makes everyone else work. I know I've said this, that phrase about being the pivot before, but he's the cog in the wheel that makes everyone else free in a way, because he just does his job and he don't stop running. And with the other two, you can't play them two together. And then when the three of them were on the pitch, they were all in each other's way as well. So you either play Dendonker at, like we've said, Dendonker and someone else, not Dendonker and two others. It just doesn't seem to work unless you play Neves, Dendonker and Vitinha. Well, we haven't seen that yet, so maybe that's a one for the future. But just Neves and Vitinha on the pitch together, it's just not working. It's been about 4 or 5 months now, and towards the end of last season as well, where they're just in each other's way and they're just too similar. But it's Dendonker and plus one for now.
Yeah, I think if you were to kind of summarise today, I mean, going into an international break as well, you know, 1-0 win, clean sheet after last weekend's debacle, I guess there's not too much you can argue with. You know, performance, you know, there's obviously some question marks over it, but ultimately we've got what we want. So, I mean, if we move on to a man of the match, lads, Dan, I'll start with you. Who really stood out?
It's a tough one, really, because obviously it was all about just getting the win today, but I don't think there was really anyone that was above probably 7 out of 10 today. Any disagreements with that rating?
Well, I've got 3 7s, the rest 6.
I mean, if I had to commit to one player, I'd probably go with Raul, just because I thought he worked hard again, could have had 2, maybe 3 goals on another day. But I just think there was all just standard performances, and just a lack of confidence on the back of West Ham. I think they can just, if I had the bottle of champagne, I'd just take it in the dressing room and say, you like pick who takes it on, because none of you really deserve it. But
you drink it yourself, Dan, is the answer to that question.
Key total now.
So rocked over. Stu, what do you reckon?
When I had a few, we said about how Kilman just manages to just slot in like he's played every game for the last 4 years in a row, and he's just imperious every time he plays somehow. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, how he can just slot in. Shout out for the 31 minutes count on the futsal mention today. longer than usual. But yeah, man, I thought Kilman played well. I thought Sayce did exceptionally well in a weird position where he's never played before for us. I thought Neto did okay. I mean, obviously he got the goal, but yeah, I mean, you are, it's a collective blanket of obscurity and a bit of magic in the end. So just Neto just by default, just for scoring the goal.
That's a very Football Manager thing to do, that. Just give it to the guy who scored.
Paul, any
other individuals might have
stood out? Exactly the same, I think, yeah. No, it's difficult to pick, really. I think, Neto got the goal, easy option. And I think he did try and make things happen, even in that first half as well. But then, I guess the only other way to look at it is maybe, you know, there's a lot of concern about Cody going up against Mitrovic, but I think Cody, maybe it's a collective that they did manage to keep him very quiet, and we saw a couple of the crossfield passes again. But yeah, very, you know, difficult to pick out, but if it was anyone, I think it'd have to be Neto.
It's the life of a defender. When you play badly, you're an individual, but when you play well, you're a unit, aren't you? And you can't pick that. But I was actually going to pick out Kilman, I think, just because, again, drafted him from the cold, really. And just slotted in. There was a funny moment, I thought, when in the first half, I think he called in a slide tackle from about 5 seconds previous to when it happened, and he gave a free kick. And I could see it from my sofa that, you know, you're not going to win that, mate. You're just not going to win it. I'm sorry. And he cleaned out Bobby Reid, I think it was. But
fair play to the guy. Well, didn't he, in the first half? There was a bit of a ding-dong in the corner.
Yeah. He was... I wouldn't necessarily go around trying to mess with him. But a good 3 points to take home in the end, boys. We'll call it a break there, and after which we'll move on to a little dance quiz.
Answer me this. How long have you had that mattress? Because it's looking even lumpier than my lockdown love handles. And while those might be more cuddly, a lumpy mattress is doing nothing for your comfort levels or your sleep. So whatever body you're rocking, put it on a Nectar mattress. Prices start at just $499, and you get $399 in accessories thrown in. That includes a Nectar mattress, mattress protector, cooling pillows and sheet set, a 365-night home trial, and a forever warranty. Go to NectarSleep.com and get hugged.
Hi, Richard here. Before you go back to hearing us dissect the latest Wolves news, some really shoehorn Simpsons references, a bit of 90s film action, of course, a bit of wrestling, I just want to do a quick shout out for our sponsors, Pixel Yeti Media. Now, they've done a fantastic job on the Wolves Fancast website, wolvesfancast.com, please go check it out. But they're not just web designers, they're a creative agency that cover all your design needs, from websites, brochures and signage to marketing, logo design and branding. There's basically nothing they can't do marketing wise, so make sure you check them out at pixelyetimedia.com, and I'll let you get back to enjoying the show.
Welcome back, guys, to the second part of the Wolves Fancast. As usual, we've got little Dan setting up a quiz for us. Paul, am I right in saying you've got like 100% record in your quizzes?
Yeah, 2-2.
Is that right? Oh, crumbs. Pressure's on.
Yeah, so, you know, like I say, we're gunning for you here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, over to you, Dan.
Yeah, we'll see.
Okay, so... As usual with the quiz, I'm glad you mentioned earlier, Paul, that you did actually listen last week. So that means you sort of know the rough format.
Yeah. That worries me, to be honest, mate.
Yeah.
I didn't get any of them last week.
It's the usual format is I'll ask a question.
Yeah.
You lot will get it wrong and then moan at me saying it's too hard of a quiz.
Yeah.
And then we get to the next question. So I'll come to you first, and obviously because you're the oldest one of us, Paul, no offence, you can have the oldest period question, which is, on the October the 9th, 1999, Wolves beat 90s rivals Bolton 1-0 at Molineux. Who scored the winner?
God.
There's only one name in my head for that. Only one. It has to be that man.
I don't even know whether he was around. This is ruminating. You get old, mate, the memory goes. It wasn't Robbie Keane, was it?
Unfortunately not. Gully?
I was going double A, yeah. Adi Akinboye.
It was Adi Akinboye. Yeah. I'm not giving you the point, Gully.
Oh,
hang on, hang on. Just for the non-video viewers, yeah. I did put an eye there.
I just thought you was calling out a recovery car. That's what it was. Okay, I'll come to you now, Stu. October the 6th, 2007, Wolves ran out 1-0 winners at home to Coventry. Who scored the winner?
Oh.
To think back to that Mick McCarthy promotion season. Paul's celebrating already by the looks of it.
Yeah. I was seven. 07 wasn't the promotion season.
Was 07, 08, wasn't it?
08, 09, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the miss by 1 point season.
Okay.
I still think I've got it.
You don't get a point for that anyway.
Was it Freddie?
Unfortunately not. Paul?
Neil Collins.
It was Neil Collins.
Good shot.
Paul Edder in the 90th minute, if you remember correctly.
Yeah, he did
score some winners for us, didn't he? I remember Doncaster being a big one.
I now know
why I thought it was the promotion season, because the next question is about the promotion season.
There we go.
Who was our record signing that season?
Just that season in particular?
Yeah.
That season, it would have been Christoph Berra.
It was Christoph Berra. Apparently, £2.3 million in the January.
Oh, and what a signing he proved to be.
So, as far as I'm aware...
I used to like him. I don't know why you're laughing. I used to quite like Berra. He had a bit of an odd running style.
You lot was talking about how good Max Kilman was today. It was basically Christoph Berra.
Yeah.
Just done his job.
Without the floppy hands.
Yeah, just done what he had to do. Didn't do anything extraordinary. I don't remember him making a key pass forward.
I'm not trusting Christoph Berra on a futsal pitch.
No.
Okay, so the next section is obviously the answer smash question. Paul, you know United Palace, don't you?
Yes, I think I saw that. Yeah, this one.
Former Wolves goalkeeper who sang a song called Freedom.
good one.
George Michael Oakes?
It was George Michael Oakes.
There you go.
Did you not get that, Stu?
I was thinking of David Hasselhoff.
What? The song called Freedom?
Stu's useless at this round.
David Hasselhoff sang a song called Looking for Freedom at the fall of the Berlin Wall.
Oh, yes. you're
so old, Stu.
It says a lot that we all thought the very straightforward response of George Michael, and you went to David Hasselhoff.
I've got a picture of David Hasselhoff holding a gold record in my kitchen.
Oh wow!
You might have raised it somewhere. You are. who did I come to second last time? Was it you, Gully? No, Stu was it.
It's Stu.
Okay. Yeah. Real name of Del Boy and former defender of Wolves.
Oh, I got this one as well.
Former defender. See, I hate this game.
You're tired. Yeah. Yeah.
It's David Jason Shackle.
This one's my favourite one of the quiz this week. Right, so, Colin, coming to you. Scandinavian fullback who caused a storm in the X-Men.
Oh, my X-Men knowledge is so bad. Oh my god.
The cogs are working all across the screen.
I've just got a Gunnar Haller in my head. But the X-Men bit, I really don't know. So I can't even answer.
I know this one.
I'll pass, Dan.
Go on then, Stu. You don't get the point, but tell us the answer.
Gunnar Halle Berry.
There you go.
Oh my god. Oh.
That's that simple. That's
caused
the first one I've ever
caused
got ever.
The storm. Oh man. Caused the storm.
So, I'm
caused
right
the storm
to say,
in my brain.
It's Paul versus Gully in the tiebreaker now.
Alright, okay. This has to happen for the fan cast.
Have you got like a phone or a piece of paper you can quickly write your answer on so you ain't cheating?
Yeah.
According to the LA Times, how tall is the Michael Jackson statue that now haunts the National Football Museum in Manchester?
What measurement do you want this in?
To the nearest inch.
Inches, okay.
So, well, yeah, foot an inch.
Okay.
So this is the Michael Jackson statue that's at the National Football Museum.
Yeah, the one that haunts it at night.
Is it? Right, okay. Blimey.
It roams. Do you know that when Wolves became world champions banner in the museum?
Yeah.
You'll regularly find us saying, hee-hee, around that at midnight.
All right, I've got an answer.
So it's the nearest foot an inch. Gully?
For shits and giggles, I'll put my name because they wrote theirs down anyway. It doesn't matter.
Gully. I'll come to you after this, Joe. Gully has gone for... Is that 6'8"?
Yeah.
Okay, Paul?
I thought it was huge. 20 foot.
Okay, Stu.
like a big sort of Stan Cullis, Billy Wright job.
What have you gone for, Stu?
I would have said 9'2".
The correct answer, and this week's winner is Gully. The correct answer is 7'6".
Taking the credit.
I reckon the block that it's on, maybe that 13 foot that you've allowed for.
Yeah, because if it's not on the plinth, yeah.
What's 13 foot between friends, eh?
I think Paul's thinking of the statue from the history cover.
Yes.
Oh yeah, the big tall one. Yeah.
Overcooked it again.
That's considerably more majestic than this version, though, isn't it?
Wow.
Taking the crown, Paul.
I know, the run's coming to an end.
Your future appearances are in jeopardy now.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to do Twitter Corner today, gents, because of the lack of feedback that we've had across social media. So I think it might be best, whilst we've got Paul on the show, just to quickly put him on the spot, but not throw him under the bus. If he's got a quick question to ask Paul, now's your time. My personal question would be, Paul, has there ever been a player in your time at Molineux that you've thought, how have you made it professionally? You can do like a sort of smash sort of description if you want, so we can work them out without throwing yourself under the bus.
Oh my word. Yeah.
Or just pick a player that hasn't got social media and can't argue.
Like something like Jobber Ronson.
Blimey. I was being diplomatic about it. And to be fair, he was a really nice fella and he'd probably agree with me. When Stefan Meyerhofer came in the Premier League.
Oh, okay.
The neck.
And you know what? I'm sure, you know, maybe there was a place for him somewhere, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't at a team trying to sort of do well in the Premier League. But yeah, really nice. He scored, I think, didn't he, when he came on?
Scored on his debut, I mean.
Yeah.
He had the same amount of league goals as red cards for Wolves. I mean, if that's not a cult hero, I don't know what is.
Yeah.
But yeah, really nice guy. I just don't, without sort of being too critical, it probably wasn't the signing that we needed at that time, was it, when we looked back?
I was always a little bit sceptical of the whole tallest player in the Premier League tag as well, because he never looked that tall, like Peter Crouch tall. I don't know what it was, but obviously official stats say that he was, wasn't he, at the time?
There's another Wolves player that looked quality on YouTube, Meyerhofer, Majanji Bia, the list goes on.
Yeah.
Majanji Bia, yeah.
Just don't know how you get to that height and then don't win a header. Baffled me a little bit. I'm sure as well, there was, on that kind of similar subject, some kind of social media exchange a few years ago where Frank Nublet was calling out Bjorn Sigurdarson for not being of any fit shape to be a professional footballer at one point.
When Mr. Clack saying things.
Hashtag Clack at the end of the comment, of course.
We've had some bollocks, ain't we?
Before your time at Wolves, growing up, Paul, was there a player that you thought, how have you made it professionally at Wolves?
But you must have seen some of the absolute dross in the 80s then.
I was kind of, I mean, what I remember, mid to late 80s. Oh my word. You try and block him out a bit. it must have been, yeah. I'd have to probably have a think. Have you got anyone in mind? Have you done this before?
I think I apologised to Darren Simkin on Twitter a while back for saying he was awful.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, there's a lot of people who Jason's had on the wolf whistle who've come on, who've admitted that they were shit. But they've been really great guys. Mm. And you think, oh, I feel sorry for abusing you, even though I wasn't even born.
It's very good. I do wonder how many players in that kind of 80s to 90s era would actually make it these days. To the level that they got to, with whether it was Premier League or Championship level. Because, you know, you watch a video of a 90-minute game. I remember watching, in lockdown, the playoff final, even the 2003 playoff final win. Yeah. And it was one of the worst games of football I have ever seen in my life. And well, I just remember, the occasion was ridiculous, but the quality of the football was absolutely shocking.
Have you ever gone back and watched the 1966 World Cup final? How bad that is.
No. I mean, obviously you was there, Stu, so I can't.
Yeah, yeah.
Me
and Paul
watching it live.
But yeah, I've got that on DVD years ago, and I watched it. I thought, this is just all. It's not even football half of it. It's just terrible. It's shit.
It's all coming back to me now. You know, some of those players. I don't know, it was mid-90s. Remember the likes of? Yeah, it seems to have a spate of bringing in random. Like Jens Duve.
Yeah, I knew you was going to be Jens Duve then.
Is it Jesus San Juan, Serge Romano? Yeah. I mean, all these guys. I don't know whether he was ahead of the curve with European football, but I don't think any of them played more than five games, did they?
You missed the king out there, Paul. Mr. Nistroy.
Robert Nistroy, yeah. From...
Paul, was you ever working when we first moved to Compton and it was just like a bunch of porter cabins? Was you at the mail then, or was it?
No, I was just on the mail. I think the last couple of years. So you had to
visit?
Yeah, you have to go to the tennis club to do interviews. and I remember it because it was quite funny because the press office was great and you'd sort of put the request in for a player, and I used to request Stephen Everson quite a lot, but every time he never turned up.
Yeah.
So eventually, he was in Walkabout, wasn't he?
I don't know what he just. It became a bit of a thing where I sort of request him every couple of weeks, and I think we got to about 10 times and he never turned up once, and still haven't done that interview. But yeah, so it was interesting times. They reckon that Dino Baggio turned up, don't they, and then saw the port cabins and disappeared pretty quickly. And
why would you take him to the training ground? I just don't know what you'd do.
Get him to sign at Molyneux and then show him afterwards when it's too late. But yeah, there were Gazza running around the tennis club were interesting times, but yeah.
When I put that picture of Gazza in a Wolves kit on Facebook, and there was loads of people saying, "What? When did this happen?"
Yeah.
Especially our American friends who'd obviously never heard the story and why he was here. Yeah, it was. If only that had worked. Because I remember we played Burnley away, and when he was playing for Burnley, I think he was. And was it Burnley or was it somewhere? It was somewhere like that where he.
You did have a spell at Burnley, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think because Ian Wright was there as well. I don't know if it was the same time. And he came over and he got a standing ovation when he was taking a corner. I thought, yeah, this is a proper legend.
Well, that was another one because I went trying to get an interview with him. Obviously, he was only on trial, so he wasn't really on the same. So he played in the reserves at Agbara, I think. Well, he did at Kiddie. And so there's two or three of us went to try and grab him afterwards. That's, you know, it was like, what are you going to do? Do you want to sign and all that sort of stuff? All of a sudden, we saw the team coach leaving, and he was like waving from the back. It was like, how the hell did he get on there? And he'd come out in like a big steward's coat, and just walk past him, even spotting him. And,
what a bloke! What a bloke! All right, well, I think that wraps us up nicely for this edition of the Fancast, guys. So it's probably a goodbye from Paul for the time being.
Goodbye, thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on, Paul.
No worries.
Stu, goodbye from you.
See you later. We'll have an episode of Filmcast to tide you over the glory of the international break. Don't worry about that.
Good stuff. What have we got on that?
I'm not actually sure yet. I think we put it out to a poll, so Andy's yet to enlighten me on the glory of what we've got over review this time.
Good stuff. And all right, cool. Look forward to that. And Dan, goodbye from yourself.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone. Just a quick reminder that we are now, just because everyone else is on YouTube now, and we've put out a Twitter competition today where you can win a new Wolves shirt of your choice. All you got to do is retweet the post and subscribe on YouTube, and then the competition closes the day of the Newcastle game, the end of the month. So good luck and enter that, and take care, everyone.
Great, yeah, we'll definitely be going for that, guys. Great, thanks for listening from me, guys, and we'll hopefully be speaking to you soon.